Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Netflix brings the final season of popular dramedy Trinkets worldwide next week. Executive producer and showrunner Sarah Goldfinger joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. 7 people attempt to live off the wilderness of Alaska in 100 Days Wild, starting tonight on the Discovery Channel. We'll hear more from executive producers Julian Hobbs and Elia Kami later this hour. Also ahead, our classic trivia question and our takeaway of the week. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebound, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 2 free books and more when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Good to have you aboard, wrapping up the week with us, the program all about TV's current and future. 81 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Beautiful day in the Big Apple. We're delighted you're along for the ride. Great hour in store for you, and we invite you to be interactive with our guests. All you have to do is pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Shout out the phone, no problem. Use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect to us by using Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions and leave me live with you. One quick news note before we get to our first guest. The Tony Awards, that were postponed from when they usually run, that's June on CBS, will be rescheduled for this fall. It will probably be in virtual format, originating from New York. We don't know yet the date. We don't know yet the exact format. We don't yet who will host. What we do know is, coming back this fall, CBS will carry it. And that is news notes for today. Our first guest has an incredible variety of credits as a producer, a writer, a showrunner on series from CSI to Y5O to Parenthood, and more recently, the reboot of Charmed on the CW. She is now the executive producer and showrunner of the final season of the Netflix popular dramedy Trinkets, whose final season unspools on smart TV sets and smart TV devices next week. Joining us live from Los Angeles in Inner Radio Exclusive, Sarah Goldfinger. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Simon.
Great to have you with us. What's it been like for you to, after all this time doing programs for broadcast television, programs for cable, you're now doing something for a service like Netflix?
Yeah, so it does definitely have its differences, and I would say I've also worked almost exclusively in hour-long television, network television, and this was a half hour, so it's a bit of a different format as well. So I joke that I was over-prepared because I'm used to doing 22 hours of television, and the whole season of Trinkets was only 5 hours, so there was some relief almost in that. And I would say that the streamers tend to have, I can't speak to multiple, the executives that we worked with at Netflix had a very gentle touch in terms of giving notes. And they were very respectful of the creative process and, gave very small notes. And so that was a nice change of pace because I think networks tend to give a lot of notes, for better and for worse. Sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not so great, but it's nice when you work somewhere where they trust the creative voice and the creative vision and kind of let you play in the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, was the transition easier for you? Because just like Charmed at the CW, you're dealing with a series about 3 women, all of whom have something in common, that are trying to live life to the fullest and deal with the problems they deal with.
It is interesting you say that. I did work back-to-back on 2 shows with 3 female leads. Yes, in one they're witches and in one they're thieves. yes. I think it's funny. I my career is one of those things that only makes sense in retrospect, but I think I worked for a really long time on CSI, and that was a very sort of hardcore crime procedural, which was great and gave me tremendous amount of plot experience that I don't know as writers. I think we tend to focus more on character. So it was really good to get to go somewhere and really learn how to tell very tightly plotted things. But I got very hungry to do character. And so then I moved on to more family shows like Brothers and Sisters and Parenthood. And then I got to, you know, and some other procedural sprinkled in between. But then I moved on to Jane the Virgin, which had very much more sort of comedic elements to it. And then Charmed was kind of a hybrid of some of the genre stuff, but also some comedic stuff. And then Trinkets got to be this sort of special, you know, I think it's a dramedy. I think it's a little bit of everything. And it's definitely funny, but it also has a sort of tender spirit that I think is more common with dramas. So, yeah, and so I guess it was an I guess what I'm saying is it sort of all in a weird way was a march towards shows like Trinkets that you get to tell. You have to be very specific and tightly plotted, but it's also you know, a half hour. You really kind of extract just the most concentrated juice of the story and put that out there, and then the rest kind of fades away because you have much more limited space to tell the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What's it like for this program, Trinkets, for you to come in running the show in its final season, knowing that you're the person that is overseeing this series, you know, wrapping things all up, and hopefully wrapping it up to the satisfaction of their audience?
Right. Well, I will say there was consistency in terms of the creators, Kiwi Smith, Amy Endelson, and Emily Meyer, were there and worked with the show in season one, and then were there and worked with the show in season two. So there was some consistency of storytelling because they were there. And I think that when I came on, as with many jobs of many industries, you have to go to multiple interviews to get the job. And I had gone on interviews with the creators and executives and things like that. And finally, by the third or fourth interview, I turned to them and I said, I really want this job. I really love this show. And I think that I could, you know, take very good care of it. And so I think that was, it was true. And I was really, really glad that I got to be the person to Shepherd to season two. And when I took the job, obviously we didn't know it was the final season. But then when they picked us up for season two, officially, they let us know that it would be the final season. And, you know, I would say we had a few days of being utterly disappointed and kind of flapping our arms and being, you know, think it was incredibly tragic. And then as we sort of got back on the horse, it was really clear that there's a real luxury in knowing you have an ending, that, you know, that it's time. Because I think so many shows, even myself included as a fan of TV, if the show doesn't know it's ending and then it ends on a cliffhanger or it ends on something else, then you don't have a chance to properly service the characters and the fans can feel kind of abandoned. And we didn't have any of that, which was great. We got to sort of say, like, okay, what would be the final conclusion and how can we send these three, you know, young girls off to do what they need to do with their lives and feel like it's triumphant, but also bittersweet.
Awesome TV, you know, the folks behind Trinkets. It was a big hit when it premiered some time back on Netflix. That was back for not only a sophomore season, but a final season of 10 episodes. And that season unspools on smart TV sets and smart TV devices that carry Netflix starting early next week. We've got Sarah Goldfinger. She is the executive producer and showrunner of the sophomore final season, and she is with us from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Happy Your Boy with us, too. Son Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tune Radio. If you have a question or comment for Sarah, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next episode is Monday at this very hour, and joining us, we'll have people from not one but two attractions coming up on Hulu. One is the producer and director of the movie The Binge, and his name is Jerry Garlick. A very interesting movie, one of the few original ones that Hulu has attempted. We'll talk to him in our first half hour. And then we'll talk to the creators of a series that in three seasons has become a worldwide sensation. It's called Find Me in Paris. Hulu has run every episode, and the third and final season will start tonight, or if not, earlier today. So be sure to join us when we have the creators of that program, Jill Berlin and Lori Mather-Welch. They'll be with us live Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Find Me in Paris and The Binge from Hulu. We'll profile them Monday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sarah, for those who haven't seen Trinkets yet, tell everyone about the three women who are involved and what they're up to.
Sure. So if you haven't seen the show, there are three characters, and there's Elodie, who is the kind of new-to-town indie outsider, and then there's Mo, who is more kind of, like I describe her as kind of the edgy punk girl, and then Tabitha, who is the pretty popular girl who is sort of contemplating whether popularity is worth it. And they all meet, they would never be friends in school, but they all meet at a Shoplifters Anonymous meeting and realize they have the same shoplifting addiction, and so they bond over that and become, you know, establish a deep and unlikely friendship.
I should also point out that the girls are played by Bianca Hildebrand, Quintessa Swindell, and Kiana Mitchell. I hope I got that right. If I mispronounced, I apologize.
Yes.
And they come from a lot of different backgrounds, from Deadpool, The Flash, and in the case of Quintessa, Euphoria, which, of course, has been getting a lot of rave reviews. The Die got nominated for an Emmy Award a few weeks back, a number of other nominations for that series on HBO. So you have a very interesting range of cast people and backgrounds to deal with.
It was an amazing cast. I mean, I think that's part of the show's success and its charm are these three actors. They're incredible, and the supporting cast is really good too. And you know, and I don't want to say that we got them on the rise, because they certainly have a body of work before they came to us, but I feel like we got lucky, right? Like, we still got to have them before anything sort of exploded, and it just I feel so grateful and lucky that we got to work with all of them, and they are special and interesting young people, which, you know, I think is a nice thing to be able to say about a young cast of actors.
Yeah. And you also have some very interesting veterans in the cast, too. I think it's the second TV series that we have profiled in recent months that has Larissa Olenight. Many people remember her from way back when.
Yeah.
People like her now back on Nickelodeon. She did Mad Men. She just seems to be popping up all over the place, and including your series.
Well, right. So that was kind of fun, because Kiwi Smith, who wrote 10 Things I Hate About You, had worked with Larissa before, and so I think that she had reached out to see if she wanted to do it. And this season, we also have Andrew Keegan playing a role in the show, who is also a 10 Things I Hate About You alum. So kind of fun like Easter egg to the audience.
You also have two other interesting elements. Number one, a mostly female production team, including, I believe it's all female writers, all female or mostly female executive producers. And the other is that you shot the second season in Portland, Oregon. What was it like to shoot there? But what was it like to have that kind of female talent, that level of female talent all around?
Right. Okay. Well, first I'll say we did have two male writers. The entire writing staff is not women. But yes, it is a very a lot of obviously all the creators are women. I am a woman, and a lot of the, even in production, you know, a lot of the upper level people on set and all people on set were it was a very good vibe in terms of gender equity, and that will lead me to my Portland discussion, which is, you know, I have filmed in LA, I filmed in Vancouver, and I filmed in Portland and in Hawaii. And Portland, the crew was just so lovely and so open and genuinely, like, shot the show from a real place of love. And it was so nice to be a part of it. And they were just so kind. So, you know, whether that was the influence of having a lot of women on set or, the thing I always say about that is having women on set is one thing. Having men who get behind those women on set and say, I'm good with this and I support this and I want to make it good, is a different story. Because, you know, you can have the women there, but if they're not being received well, then it can go wrong. So we had both for this. And so I fell in love with Portland. I'm a big Portland evangelist, not only for working there, but just as a place in the world. And so it's definitely been on all of our minds a lot with the national media attention it's getting. And I think it's probably not an accident that Portland is a litmus for the country. I think there's a lot of forward thinking there. I think there's a lot of progressive action. But it is, you know, I come from Pennsylvania, which I think is sort of the East Coast sister of Oregon, and, you know, interesting state politics where you have blue pockets inside an otherwise red state. And so it can make for complicated living. And I think that that's okay. You know, it's so I think that.
Yeah. I was just saying, no, go ahead, finish your thought, and I'll pop in with something.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Finish your thought, Sarah, and then I'll pop in with something I think might be interesting.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't need to sort of wax poetic about politics. That's not my game. But I guess I would just say, like, Portland is a beautiful city. It's a telegenic city. It's a vibrant, interesting city with lots of different pieces to it. And, you know, I mean, there's a forest in the middle of Portland. I don't know if many people know that, but Forest Park is there, and it's this enormous forest. That's an amazing thing to have in a city. So my point is that it was really fun to shoot something that was Portland for Portland, as opposed to LA trying to pretend it's New York or vice versa, or, you know, that it was so luxurious to be like, yes, let's use that bridge. Let's use that cliff. Let's use that building that people might know, because it's supposed to be Portland. And, you know, there's so many great murals all over the city, and we shot in front of some of those, which felt really special and unique. And so especially for our show, which has a kind of dreamy, indie, thoughtful, moody, teen girl kind of headspace, that I think the city was a perfect complement for the show.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that last Friday we had Leslie Grandy, who was working with the Emmy-winning actor Tom Skerritt in Seattle, uh-huh, on a new programming service available on smart TV sets and smart devices called Evergreen. And the idea is it's trying to be a showcase for talent in the Pacific Northwest, Portland, Seattle, Spokane, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And they seem to be off to a good start, and we'll see if they ultimately go from having film festival titles, other things too, that have already been produced, to actually commissioning original scripted series, unscripted, et cetera, there too. But we talked to Leslie Grandy, the chief executive of Triple Squirrels, the company that she and Tom Skerritt formed to make this channel. And you got the sense from our interview last Friday that, yes, they are. The long-term goal is to commission original material for those filmmakers in Portland and Seattle, Spokane, and other places around the Pacific Northwest. By the way, if you want to hear that interview that we did, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We did that last Friday, and Leslie was an outstanding guest. When you are doing a series where it's both in a sophomore season and a final season, as a showrunner, how do you work the writer's room? How do you work with the directors? How do you deal with both situations in the same time and establish a mood, a framework to do your really outstanding work on Trinkets?
Well, I will say that is, again, one of the advantages of streaming over network is that you can we had almost the entire season written before we started shooting. So, you know, you don't always have that luxury, and so if you have to pivot or change course with things that have already been shot, it puts you in a much tighter box. So at least we knew what we were doing and how we were doing it before we even shot a frame. So that was really good. How to handle it? I mean, I think it's funny. Some people would say, like, oh, isn't it a bummer, like, to care so much and know that it's not going to keep going. And I would say, some things are just too beautiful to last forever. And so I think, like, that was the fantasy I had to tell myself, because I love the show very much and was very, you know, proud of everyone's work on the season. So I think it just feel like a gem. And I think it's okay sometimes for things to, you know, be a gem and be short, right? And be tight or compact. And you know, we did the best we could, and I think the way that we ended it felt very satisfying to everybody in the writer's room and the creators of the show. And I think, like I said earlier, like, having the luxury of being able to kind of send your characters off, you know, down the river and let them float away and watch them and know sort of in general where they're headed, but in specific, not really know. I don't know. There's something that it was sort of poetic about it.
The second and final season of Trinity Kids premieres early next week on Netflix. And if you're one of the 80% of households that has a smart TV set, a smart device, you can probably get it because Netflix is probably there. We speak with Sarah Goldfinger, the executive producer and showrunner of this season of Trinkets. She's live with us from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. On that, I'm with you. Thank you for tuning us in on this Friday afternoon. 81 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Sarah, give us a call. Sarah, give us a call. 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, TinyApple04 by name. Stay tuned. Before the bottom of the hour, we've got our classic trivia question of the week. If you're pushed with the correct answer, you can win a wonderful book called Personality Not Included, Why Companies Lose Their Authenticity and How Great Brands Get It Back, by Rohit Pargava, forwarded by the venture capitalist himself, Guy Kawasaki. That's coming up before the bottom of the hour, so get your thinking caps on. We want to get our fifth winner in the last 6.5-7 weeks or so. So get ready. Question coming up before the bottom of the hour. So what is next for you, Sarah? What, now that Trinkets is complete, where do you go?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I will say that I have definitely caught the bug for single-camera half-hour television. It, I think it's maybe where I wanted to start from the very beginning, and then, you know, but your life takes all kinds of crazy detours, and then I feel like I'm back to this type of storytelling I want to tell. I am lucky in that inside quarantine, I've had a little space and time, and I've, you know, been writing my own projects, and obviously it would be wonderful if that could get made, but you know, it's strange times to try to take on new things. So we'll see what happens.
Well, with the interest you have now in single camera half hour shows, you have the opportunity to do comedies. You can do dramas. You can do dramedies. Is there a certain kind of show that you haven't done yet that that maybe this experience invites you to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I find really appealing are the sort of observational life comedies. You know, like I think Pamela Adlon's Better Things fits in this category. I think Rami fits in this category. A little bit Fleabag fits in this category of just really sort of very true comedic slice of life, artfully crafted stories. And so I think that that would be very exciting for me to get to be able to work, play in that space.
Mm-hmm. Are you thinking also about who you want to work with? For example, would you like to work with Trinkets creators on another project, or work with Netflix, or work with another service that's distributed on smart TV sets, whether it's Hulu or Peacock or HBO Max or Topic or some of the other services that have been launching over the last few months?
Sure, of course. I mean, like I said, my experience with Netflix was incredibly positive, and so I would work there again. In terms of the creator of Trinkets, like, I think that we work really well together on this. I know they have a bunch of other projects that they're doing, and so obviously if our lives were to, you know, come together again and cross paths, perhaps, but I think they also write features and books and lots of other things, so they're in many different directions. And in terms of where I would go, I would certainly go back to Netflix. I think Hulu has really good taste. I'm interested in the shows that they're making, both buying, you know, the sort of FX brand, but then also the original stuff they make. I think HBO Max is still finding its feet, but I like some of their content for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting how many more outlets there are to sell to now than there were before. You know, I've been in the business 20 years, and it was really like three networks and then Fox sometimes, you know?
Yeah, so, I do remember those days. I remember those days when all Fox was if not for local news and stuff, it was the Late Show with Joan Rivers, and then it was a Sunday night lineup with shows like America's Most Wanted and Werewolf and Married with Children. And then it just grew and grew and grew to, you know, one network.
The Simpsons.
More than,
I feel like The
Simpsons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is still on. It keeps
right.
on rolling.
Right.
One other thing before we go. What's your sense of what is happening since you're in Los Angeles with getting TV production back in your city?
Oh, I mean, it's interesting. I do know some people who are in prep on some things, and they're getting COVID tested every 3 days, and they're doing most of the work of phone calls, you know, that they would normally do from a production office. They're doing it from their own homes. they're going on location scouts, but everybody's riding in separate cars rather than in a joint van. You know, I mean, I think people are trying to figure out how to make it all work, but it is a very slow roll, which I think is probably smart.
Second season and final season of Trinkets, very popular show on Netflix. It happens early next week. If you have a smart TV set, a smart device, you can catch it when it debuts. Check your local listings for where Netflix is available, by the way, in your area. But if you're not a Netflix subscriber, you can get it. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.netflix.com/Trinkets. That's www.netflix.com/Trinkets. Trinkets. Starting next week, second and final season on Netflix. Sarah Goldstein, the executive producer and showrunner of that season, thank you for joining us again from where you are in Los Angeles. All the very best to you and everybody involved for a great wrap-up to a very popular show on Netflix. And hopefully, best of luck with whatever you're going to be up to in the future. We'd love to have you back. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome, Sarah. All the best to your cast and crew, and everybody have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
Take care. Sarah Goldfinger, executive producer and showrunner of Trinkets on Netflix, joining us live from Los Angeles. Classic trivia question coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Do you want some inspiration? I mean real inspiration, no matter where you come from, no matter what you're about in life, inspiration that makes a difference. Well, you can hear that inspiration through an audiobook called Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, and it's one of those wonderful audiobooks that you can now get with a trial subscription to Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider, not a, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and oh yes, inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio, or iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. You get two free audiobooks for a limited time, plus health and wellness material, very important these days, and that one-month trial with great customer service from Audible's talent, Amazon.com. By the way, one of those audiobooks of the two you get is from the growing collection of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions, that's the Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. So how about this weekend, you or someone you know, make it the time that you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you know hears the world. Makes a great gift any time of the year. It's audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. It's our last time we're going to offer the question on this program. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win great best-selling book, Personality Not Included, Why Companies Lose Their Authenticity, and How Great Brands Get It Back, by Rohit Bhargava, forward by a venture capital leader, the one and only Guy Kawasaki. This is a question we've been offering since a week ago Monday. Name the first or last television series starring Anthony Franciosa. From the mid-1960s to the mid-1980s, this Oscar-nominated, Tony-nominated actor appeared in 5 television series, all of which in a starring role. Some of the series he did, there was The Name of the Game, which he revolved with Gene Bowie and Robert Stack. And there was also Search, which he was involved with Doug McClure and Hugh O'Brien. That was the second and third shows that he did. And in the 1970s, he was Matt Helm, the Dean Martin character played in the movies from the Boxer Spy series in the 1960s. So we want to know the first series and the last series. The first one was a comedy, that's a clue. Last one was an anthology drama, executive produced by Aaron Spelling. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you send the email, enclose your name, your mailing address, so we can get the book to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end of the day, we'll post it tomorrow morning and all weekend, if need be, on Facebook and on Twitter. That's Simon Applebaum on Facebook and at UBC Simon, TWBT on Twitter. Let's see if we can get our winner, our first one in the last 2 weeks. But remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So make it happen, and all the very best. When we come back, our takeaway of the week, a very special deal for a very special Latino writer. But first, two people who used to be network TV executives in different places come together to make a show that premieres tonight on Discovery Channel, 100 Days Wild. It's their latest excursion, that's the network excursion, in the world of Alaska. Julian Hobbs, Ellie Hakami, join us live from New York after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. It's www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn, RadioTune.com. Together, reaching over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. VCR is your home radio today for the Andy Pat Show. Catch it about 90 minutes from now, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. That's the Anthony Pat Show on VCR, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. And don't forget the best of VCR and Spreaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televise, our third episode this week of the program all about TV's current and future. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. More great guests coming your way in the half hour ahead, plus our takeaway of the week. And we invite you to respond. All you have to do is give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Here's a question. What do you do when you connect a former executive at History Channel with a former executive at NTV Networks? You get a production company whose latest work premieres tonight on the Discovery Channel. It's called 100 Days Wild. That's 100 Days Wild, and it deals with a group of people who decide to live off the wilderness land in Alaska, and a state that Discovery Channel has done many a show about. Joining us live from New York is one of the people who executive produced the series, Julian Hobbs. Julian, welcome in.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having us.
And joining you is your cohort in the production company that's making 100 Days Wild. I'm talking about executive producer Ellie Hakami. Ellie, great to have you aboard.
Hi. Nice to speak to you today.
Same here. And Ellie, we'll start with you. How did the 100 Days Wild come into play?
We were scouting in Alaska probably 2 years ago, if not a little bit longer, and we met two very fascinating individuals by the name of Andrew and Jennifer, who, after we had long conversations with them, told us about their desire to start a nomadic hunter-gatherer community. And when we heard that they had been trying to do this and they had been trying to do it for 5 years, we were immediately intrigued and had to kind of pursue and know more.
Mm-hmm. Julian, Friday nights for years have become Alaska Night on Discovery Channel. Why do you think that is, and what do you think your series brings to that long-running streak of shows?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Well, Ellie and I actually met running development for Discovery Channel out of New York. It must be 12 or 13 years ago. They already had some of their famous franchises like Deadliest Catch. Since then, they've had Gold Rush and many, many others, Alaska Bush People. So actually, while there's a huge tradition on Discovery Channel, our challenge was to make a show that felt new and fresh within that space. I think people have come used to that genre and have a certain expectation, but what we were challenged to do by the network is to work on a show that was going to bring a fresh audience into that space. So we have a much more diverse cast. I think we have a different set of challenges. I think the whole feel of the world is different from your traditional Alaska survival show. So it floats on the heritage of those great shows, but hopefully it feels fresh to the audience.
And Ellie, the big background about your series is that you have these seven people who come from various backgrounds. They've never met each other before this. And they go to this section of Alaska, and they're basically told you have to live off the land for something like 3.5-4 months. Go to it.
Yeah, that's it. And I think all of them, you know, I think each individual at one moment in time had always wanted to try to unplug, if you will, and start a life that was one that does live off the land, where you completely, you know, sustain and live by what is around you. And the reason that Alaska is a location that you can do it, you know, do something like this in, is because it actually has the natural resources that a community would need to feed them, to clothe them, and they would have, and they all had to build their own shelter. So I think also one of the reasons, you know, it's important to note that we landed in Alaska is because Alaska can support seven, you know, a community of seven people who are trying to live this type of lifestyle.
Yeah. Julian, when you and Ellie picked the seven people for your series, what did they say motivated them to do this? What is in their spirit? What's in their DNA that says, I've got to take on this challenge?
Well, I think it's something that is almost universal this day, which is there a way out? You know, there's something aspirational. It started with our frontier spirit, and it continues in Alaska, which is, hey, I don't necessarily have to do the 9-to-5 life. I don't necessarily have to live the way that people tell me I have to live, you know? And so it's a romantic idea. Of course, surviving it is much harder than thinking about surviving it. So all of these people who came do have legitimate outback off-grid skill set. Some of them had not practiced as much, so they were really setting out to fulfill a dream. Others had lived for years in the wild. We have our character Oliver, who has been living off-grid for 20 years in Utah on his own. And so for a lot of them, it was a dream fulfilled, and for others, it was extending their skill set into a new place. I will say the one thing that ties them all together, though, it's not lone wolf survival. That's what you see in a lot of these survival shows, which is just a single man against the wild. Here, there was a real sense that they needed to build a community to survive together, which I think is also very aspirational given where we are as a country.
Mm-hmm. Ellie, anything you want to add about what Julian just said?
Yeah, I think that in terms of how these seven people came together, I think they all had a common dream. And I think that dream was to, you know, as Julian said, to you know, try to build a life for themselves and eventually for their families that fits outside of the norm, and to kind of come together with people who also share this dream to see if they can pull it off together. And I think there's something really aspirational about what all of these individuals brought to the table, which was like, we're going to put it all on the line. We're going to walk away from what everyone knows is a normal life, and we're going to try to build something new.
You can see the results for yourself starting tonight on 100 Days Wild. The premiere is tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the Discovery Channel. We have the two people who executive produced the series. They did it through their own production company, Julian Hobbs and Ellie Economy. They're both with us live from New York this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom and Applebaum with you live also from the Big Apple. It's 81 degrees at the top of the hour. Beautiful day. We're expecting about mid-80-degree temperatures this weekend. And I hate to say this, but I think we have another heat wave for late next week. Maybe. But as they say, weather sometimes do change. Anyway, Julian and Ellie are ready to hear from you, so give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tuner Radio. Or you can check out our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Monday on our program, we've got the producer director of a new made-for-TV movie from Hulu. It's called The Binge. Premieres shortly, and we will have that person, Jeremy Gallick, will be our lead guest on Monday. Plus, we'll meet two women who will put together one of the big worldwide sensations for family audiences. It's called Find Me in Paris. It's been on Hulu for several years. The third and final season started earlier today on that service, and we will have those two creators and producers, Jill Gerling and Laurie Master Welch, with us live. And we may have them live from Paris. You never know. That's coming up Monday, 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Ellie, when you're not only putting together the subjects, but you're putting together a production crew, what goes through you and Julian about how you make this type of a show work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most important thing, in all honesty, is safety first, because when you are in Alaska, you are in life or death scenarios, and it's just part of the world that is Alaska. Brutal winters, harsh landscapes, you know, obviously there's wildlife there. And so when we put a crew together, the first thing that we think about is everyone's safety. And so, you know, there are guides that we bring into Alaska who know how to navigate this type of landscape. They help our crews, you know, stay safe and like are able to kind of, you know, live in the wild day and day, because our crews don't go back to hotels at night. They're living alongside our participants who are living off the land. So we really have to build an infrastructure that first and foremost keeps our crews safe and keeps them comfortable in a way that they can focus on, you know, capturing brilliant moments and you know, capturing an incredible narrative, feeling, you know, safe and secure.
Mm-hmm. Julian, What kind of, did you decide to use this show to introduce any new production techniques, like use drones for the first time, or GoPro cameras, or body cams, or things like that, that give the viewer an extra added edge, if you will, in what they're seeing?
Well, very much so. I mean, actually, one of our techniques was trying to be less interventionist. There's an aspect of this in which these people had to form an outpost, form a colony, form a community, and evolve up their own rules. And while you can't avoid the fact that there's a film crew there and there's camera people there, part of our job was to stand back and watch this thing evolve organically. And that meant that a lot of the conflict, a lot of the successes, a lot of the adventure was happening organically. So I think that will feel fresh to viewers, which is it doesn't feel overproduced. You know, yes, there's beautiful nature shots, there's fantastic drone shots, there's great camera work, but it's following more in a verite tradition rather than a staged reality show. That's what we were trying to avoid.
Yeah. For both of you, and Julia, I'll start with you on this. What impressed you as eyewitnesses to this community building exercise?
Oh, I just feel that we're at a point as a society and as a country, and this is not a political statement, where everybody's divided. We're divided by politics, we're divided by gender, we're divided by race, we're divided by where we live, red state, blue state, on and on it goes. And I think that there's a real hunger in the zeitgeist for people to go, how can we bridge those differences? How do you actually form a community where diverse people have to not only get along, but actually have to rely on each other for survival? So I think it's an interesting mirror for us to look at our society through people attempted this. Now, I don't want to give any spoilers. I'm not saying that it was utopia. It was not perfect. Not everyone got along in the way you one would hope. But it's an interesting insight into how people might view their brothers and sisters who happen to live in a different part of the country or be of a different gender or a different color, how we might actually build a new type of society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ellie, did anything really open up for you in terms of, again, being an eyewitness like Julian to what you saw?
Yeah, I think that, you know, everyone – I think what impressed me was how much people were committed to the idea of community and wanting to figure out if this community could be built and work for them. And people gave it their all. And I also think that people were willing to push back what their normal boundaries were and push beyond what their normal boundaries were in terms of their skill set and their comfort zone and put that all kind of, you know, out there so that they could build something that they could be proud of.
Yeah. Ellie, with the 100 days timeline, how did you and your crew and Julian fashion the episodes in terms of, let's say, episode one deals with X time, episode two that time? What as things were unfolding, was in both of your minds in terms of how you structured each episode in the series?
I think that we, you know, we weren't formulaic in that, you know, episode one was the first 20 days and then episode two was the next 20 days in that sense. I think that we looked to carve the arc of the narrative in a way that, you know, was natural evolution of what they had to do and what they had to get done and where they were at within the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the 100, just to mend this, the 100 days was something that came to us kind of on a second wave of thinking. It just so happened that when people came together, which was in late August, early September, that we didn't realize it because that was organically happening. People were trickling in over several weeks, but we realized that that was 100 days until December 21st, the beginning of winter. So it organically lent itself to having a clock that was ticking above them, that if they did not figure out how to build shelter, gather resources, and form a bond in a community, they were heading into the eye of the tiger, as it would be with an Alaska winter heading their way.
Ellie, I'll start with you. What is it like for both of you, having come from the same background, where not so long ago you were green-lighting television shows, in your case for MTV, in Julian's case for history, you were doing a lot of stuff unscripted. Julian was doing a lot of stuff scripted. To actually eyewitness a program that you greenlight come to life as opposed to doing it from an executive position?
I think that's another great question. I do think that, you know, it's the difference of, you know, being boots on the ground and being more hands-on and sitting in an edit room day in and day out and really, you know, being, you know, involved in every, you know, piece of the decision-making and the process and, you know, working one-on-one with the talent on a, again, on a day-to-day basis. Whereas I think, you know, being an executive, which is also, you know, brilliant and fun, it's more supervision. You know, you're definitely there to guide the production, but when, you know, you're making the production, you're there to actually hands-on execute the production.
Yeah. Julian, same question.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, Ellie and I come out of a similar background. Ellie has a master's degree in fine arts, and I have a degree in cinema studies from NYU. And, you know, in the 90s, we were, you know, I was living on the Lower East Side, and we were making independent films. I did Peter Skarsgård, one of his first films when he was still at Yale Drama School, was produced out of my loft in the Lower East Side. And I was making independent documentary. And then what happens is you realize in New York that there was beginning to be a big churn of business in cable, right? So I was working for National Geographic, and I was working for New York Times Television. And you begin to suddenly earn a living, but always in your heart of hearts was that you want to get back and make a film. You want to be a creative. And that's not to knock the great experiences that I think we both had within networks, because there's a tremendous power to be behind being able to green light shows and access to money and this, that, and the other. But I think for both Ellie and I in our hearts is we're makers, you know, and that's what we like doing. We're creatives.
You're hearing the executive producers of Julian Hobbs and Ellie Hakami. They have their own production company. Their latest work begins tonight on Discovery Channel, 100 Days Wild, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And they are both with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Appel with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with our dynamic duo, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonAppel04. My name. And coming up before the top of the hour, our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week. This time, it comes from NBC Universal and a highly regarded Latino series creator and what they're doing beyond just a program development deal. And it may not be the only one these folks are doing. So more about that in our takeaway of the week coming up in a few minutes. Julian, how did you and Ellie get together and how long has your production company been around?
Well, as I said, we first met running the New York office of Discovery Channel Development, and that would be quite a while ago, maybe 12 years ago or so. We parted ways. Ellie moved from New York to L.A. and went on a very successful career there at BBC Worldwide, and then moved back to New York at MTV. I was just finishing up 6 years doing both scripted and unscripted at History Channel. And for both of us, organically, honestly, it was Alan Braun at CAA, who's our agent, said, you guys should really start a production company. You know, it's time for you guys to get back and dig in and make some shows. And that was 5 years ago. And we're very proud of the run we've had. We've had shows on HBO. We have a pilot coming out on HBO Max. We have a Disney Plus show. We've done a lot of series for ID and History Channel. So, you know, we've had a good run and we're enjoying it, you know, and so this is kind of the culmination of 4 or 5 years of busy work, starting a small production company in New York.
Ellie, I understand that you have a project with Issa Rae, who, of course, her HBO series Insecure is running high, more Emmy Award nominees than ever. She's up for it. Siobhan Orsi's up as well. And I understand it's with Issa's production company, Color Creative. What's that all about?
We launched a competition for minority and female writers to essentially submit an idea that they had been bubbling on. The spirit behind the competition was to help open doors for women and minority writers who may be struggling to get access into our industry. So we launched this competition. It was a nationwide competition, and we received many, many submissions, and from those submissions, there was a winner and also a second runner-up, whose projects were then helped, shepherded, and developed by industry professionals who both work mostly work in on the scripted side of the business. And then we were able to help them take their projects out to market. And through that process, they not only were able to, you know, see how a project gets made on the scripted side, but both people who were chosen as the winner and the runner-up now have jobs in the scripted side of the industry.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, if their scripted projects turn into series, we would love to have either or both winners on our show. So just know that, keep us posted about how that is doing. And also, if is this going to continue on? Is this a one shot, or do you see it happening again next year?
Oh, that's a good question. We did it as a one-off, and I know that Color Creative, you know, continues to do these types of contests and competitions, and you know, outreach, you know, to help, you know, minority and female writers break into the business. I would love to do it again. I have to say, it was probably one of the more fulfilling things I've done in my career, to kind of help someone out who you know, might be having a tough time breaking into the industry.
Mm-hmm. Julian, talk about the HBO Max pilot. And also, did I read right that when Discovery does its proposed streaming service or smart TV set nonfiction service, that they're going to have original programming and that you're doing a project for them?
Yes. Yeah, so quickly on Discovery OTT, which is super exciting, I know, got a lot of buzz for people who have long-term relationships with Discovery. We actually have a show. It's not been announced, so I can't speak about that, but I would love sometime down the road to talk about it, because it's really exciting and it's different. It was greenlit through ID for the OTT platform, and it's not your typical ID show. It's definitely kind of flips the format on its head. In terms of what's going on over at HBO Max, Ellie, I'll let you take that. I mean, you're both involved in it, but Ellie's very hands-on with that. So, Ellie, do you want to?
Yeah, that's a project that is called Fantasy Feasts. And it essentially, if you know, imagine a Krabby Patty or a Willy Wonka Everlasting Gobs, you know, stopper. Those are all foods that live within imaginary worlds, but we've never tasted them because they don't exist in real life. So it's a competition that brings some very imaginative chefs together that will take these fantasy foods and turn them into real life dishes.
Mm-hmm. And before we go, any scripted pilots that, you know, Julian, you were very big at history on shows like Vikings, which is coming to a conclusion pretty soon. Any scripted ideas in the works?
We have scripted ideas, but as a young company, and I was involved in scripted for quite a few years, we have ideas. I wouldn't say, other than what we've done with Issa Rae, that we've moved on them. I think, as we all know, scripted is a slower game, and so I think if we look for our next 5 years, we've gone through our first 5 years, we've done probably 70 hours worth of programming. I certainly hope in the next 5 years we will launch our first scripted show. So that's our next goal.
If you want to know more about 100 Days Wild, remember, first of all, it's on tonight, 9:30 Pacific time on Discovery Channel. Check your local network. That network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about that program, go to www.discovery.com. It's www.discovery.com. And Julian and Ellie, if people want to know more about your production company, where do they go on the web? I know you have a site. And it looks good, too, by the way.
www.talosfilms.com. Talos, he's the Greek robot who protects Crete. So Talos, talosfilms.com.
And I have a hunch we're going to be seeing a lot more from this production company over its next half decade. Starting tonight with 100 Days Wild, that's again 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on the Discovery Channel. Available on cable and satellite all over the place. Julian Hobbs, Elliot Comey, thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on your 5-year anniversary. This show coming on, and hopefully much more down the road in the future. And we'd love to have you back anytime.
Thanks, Simon.
You.
Have a great weekend.
You too, the greatest. Take care.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Julian Hobbs, Elliot Comey, joining us live from New York. And now it's time for our regular Friday feature before we leave you, the takeaway of the week, the one programming development or the one development in television that you should take away from this week. And it happened on Wednesday, and it happened with one of the production units of NBC Universal. That's Universal Content Productions, the folks behind such shows as Mr. Robot. It's a program development deal when you look at it from afar. And that program development deal is with a marvelous talent named Tanya Saracho. She's the person that 3 years ago launched a terrific dramedy series on Starz called Vida, which has gotten a lot of critical attention and wonderful audience reaction as well. Wrapped up its run on Starz earlier this year. Well, she now has a program development deal with Universal Content Productions and more. Because here's what she's going to do. In addition to developing her own stuff, she's also going to be involved in a brand new talent incubator project that's specifically designed to find and mentor and nurture Latino and Latina talent. That's right, in television. It's a special incubator that has not been tried before at Universal Content Productions or the other divisions of Universal's content work. That's Universal Television and Universal Alternative, which is their unscripted unit. Tanya is very excited about what she's going to do. We tried to get her on the program, by the way. We talked to the key NBC Universal executive working with UCP, but we hope to have her on, or maybe somebody involved, or Dawn Olmstead from UCP, the head of that organization, down the road to talk about this. And why? Well, because this is not going to be a one-shot. Here's what Bonnie Hatter, the chairman of Universal Studios Group that has all three divisions under her wing, here's what she had to say in a press release about this deal when it came out on Wednesday, and I quote, "This is the first of many programs we will be backing across our three studios." Read that again. "This is the first of many programs we will be backing across our three studios." Knowing Bonnie Hamner, and I've known her for a long time, she's going to make whatever she has to make or do to carry out that declaration. Trust me, she will. And when time is of the essence, she's not going to be the only one. Remember, a couple weeks ago, we talked about another takeaway of the week, the CBS deal with the NAACP to create a whole new infrastructure for all sorts of programming produced with various CBS platforms produced by people of color. And I have a hunch that we're just getting started where these program development deals are not going to be made with just creators of color incubating talent as well. So congratulations to UCP and Tanya. That's our takeaway of the week. And like I said, more to come. I want to thank all of our guests today and this week. We have three episodes this week for being on our program. And thank all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, coming up on Monday, we'll have Jeremy Gatlick, the producer and director of the new Hulu original movie, The Binge, and Joe Goldway and Lori Master Welch, the creators of the popular Hulu series, Find Me in Paris, that is a worldwide sensation. Third and final season started earlier today on Hulu. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage. That's Blocks of Week and Unfortunately I Tell Live. And this weekend, check out our podcast of all of our shows this month and all year. You'll find it at iTunes, Apple TV, Speakers Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. Remember, we'd love to hear from you. Email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, at UBCSimonWBT. We always love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers in this program. Our production associate, BTR, is Men in the Wind. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Steinberg is head of content. And the co-founders are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we talk about is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Audible will transform the way you hear the world. But tomorrow we talk about, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back on Monday. You know when, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, and you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this week, please make it safe, make it great, follow those mandates, and let's get this pandemic lift once and forever. Until next time, stay well, and stay tuned.